Welcome to the Mint Euro Special 2016 podcast. Over the next 30 days, Ankit Prasad will take you through some of the most exciting happenings from on and off the football field.
Hello and welcome to European Nights, a show about football. The day is Wednesday, the 22nd of June, and I'm Ankit Prasad. Firstly, today I'd like to begin with an apology and a correction. A portion of the build-up to yesterday's matches was misguided because I incorrectly assumed that Turkey had been eliminated, whereas in truth, they still had a mathematical chance of making it to the knockouts as one of the top four third-place teams. Happily, in what could be said to be a case of whatever the opposite of the commentator's curse is, they highlighted the fact that they still had something to play for and weren't doomed with their actions on the pitch last night, which I will tell you about over the course of the show. So sorry for the mistake. And now, let's start with the football. First up was Group C. In Paris, Germany took on Northern Ireland at the Parc des Princes. The first half was almost relentless German pressure and the North was just barely hanging on. Muller could have had a hat-trick and Ozil too had a few chances, but McGovern in the Irish goal kept them in it. He was eventually beaten, and by eventually, we mean in the 30th minute, by Mario Gomez, who started for the first time in this tournament. Muller barged his way towards the Irish goal, running across the goal mouth, causing McGovern and a defender to run into one another, but he just couldn't wriggle enough space to get a shot away, so instead he played a simple reverse pass to a waiting Gomez, who was at least a little bit lucky to see the ball go in from very close range after taking a deflection off a desperate Gareth McCauley. The goal would be the only one in the game, even though Götze tried his best in the second half, and Gomez also missed a couple. The world champions won 1-0. At the same time, in the match between the other two sides in the group, the Ukraine and Poland played out a goalless first half, with Yarmolenko missing the best chance by far as he went through on the Polish goal but skewed his shot way wide. 10 minutes after the restart though, Arkadiusz Milik tried a double team from a corner and that resulted in him geometrically playing in substitute Jakub Blasikowski, who shifted the ball to his left foot and evaded one defender in the same move and hit an unstoppable shot from close range into the far corner of the goal, putting the Poles 1-0 up. It was a really good looking goal and it turned out to be the only one Poland needed to win. So after three games for each side, Germany topped the group with 7 points. Poland came in second, also with 7 points, but with a -1 relative goal difference to the Germans. But they'll be happy with that, as it means that they get to play Switzerland in the next round. Northern Ireland came in third with 3 points, while the Ukraine finished last with 0. Later, in the second round of matches, from Group D, Spain played Croatia and Bordeaux and took the lead in just the 7th minute as David Silva played in Fabregas at the near post with a great reverse pass and his shot that evaded the keeper was turned in by Alvaro Morata, who more than just for good measure kept it away from a player who was trying to clear it off the line. The Croats, who were without Modric, made a fist of it though, and some shoddy work by the Spanish defence and keeper almost allowed them back into the game, with Ivan Rakitic's lob over the keeper coming off the crossbar. At the stroke of half-time, however, a cross by Perisic was turned in by Nikola Kalinic at Spain's near post, as they conceded their first goal at this tournament. In the second half, both sides traded opportunities, and just shortly after Croatia had a pretty good shout for a penalty turned down, David Silva went down a little softly in the Croat penalty box, and the ref pointed to the spot. For some reason though, Sergio Ramos stepped forward to take the spot kick, and the keeper Subasic saved it, keeping his side in the contest. And then, as the game approached its conclusion, in a quick counter, Perisic was played in on the left, and after charging past the defender who was tracking him and bursting into the box, he hit a hard and low shot that went past David De Gea into his near post in a flash. Croatia had secured the win, and also handed double European champion Spain their first defeat in the Euros since 2004. Tonight, we'll be winding up the group stage. 32 matches have been played so far in what has been a rather defensive and tactical round of footballing chess, but from groups E and F, we can have greater expectations. First up at 9:30 PM is Group F, or Portugal's group, which is at the moment looking like anything but. Hungary have already made it through as they have 4 points, meaning that at the very least, they'll move ahead as a third place team. Iceland and Portugal are tied on 2 points each, while Austria have just the 1, which can be a problem. The good news for the Portuguese is that they're going to be facing the Hungarians, who are through. The bad news is that they're facing the Hungarians, who have looked rather solid so far. Still, we know how this match is going to go. Portugal, in 2 matches, have made a mind-blowing 50 attempts at goal, but what's even more eye-popping is that they've only managed to score the 1 goal so far. They'll shoot and shoot and shoot tonight as well, but will they manage to bulge the net? And who will it be? Ronaldo cannot have enjoyed this tournament so far. He arrived in style, having been given a few days extra rest after winning the Champions League final with Real Madrid. While his teammates were being beaten by England in Wembley in the warm-up matches, he was holidaying on a yacht somewhere. However, by the time he missed the 80th minute penalty versus Austria, he looked completely spent. It's unthinkable that Portugal's coach Fernando Santos will bench his captain. On the other hand, Ronaldo is likely to come out feeling that he has an even bigger point to prove. Along with everything else, he wouldn't have been happy to have learnt that his great rival Lionel Messi played a starring role for Argentina in the Copa America Centenario in the USA as they eliminated the hosts and made it through to the final. No, that wouldn't be very Ronaldo-like. Cristiano Ronaldo dos Santos Aveiro has a long history at the European Championships. This is his 4th visit. In 2004, when the championships had come to his home country, Ronaldo, then a 19-year-old who had just completed his first season at Manchester United, having helped them to win the FA Cup, had joined up as the exciting youngster of what was then a brilliant side. It was led by the original Portuguese superstar winger Luis Figo, had Paulette up front, an almost embarrassing choice between Deco and Rui Costa in the number 10 role, plus many other members of Jose Mourinho's Porto side that had just won the Champions League final, including Nuno Valente, Costinha, Maniche, Ricardo Carvalho and Paulo Ferreira. They were rock solid and could give their opponents a torrid time with their attackers to boot. And if that wasn't enough, they were led by Luis Felipe Scolari, the man who had led Brazil to the World Cup just 2 years earlier. We've spoken about what happened to them in that tournament, especially with regards to the 2 matches against eventual winners Greece, while the other match that is often remembered is the one versus England, which we'll save for a more appropriate time. But the one that doesn't get mentioned as much, but should, was their semi-final versus the Netherlands. Now, this Netherlands side, the one of Euro 2004, was a bit special. In 1998, the Dutch, then managed by Gus Hiddink, led by the De Boer brothers, and led in attack by Dennis Bergkamp, probably one of the most technically gifted players ever in Europe, had battled the original Ronaldo's Brazil side in the semi-final in Marseille, eventually losing on penalties. 6 years later, Edwin van der Sar, Michael Reisiger, Jaap Stam, Philip Cocu, Edgar Davids and Clarence Seedorf, who played in that match, lined up against Portugal in Lisbon. Only alongside them, they had also Ruud van Nistelrooy, then probably the best centre-forward in the world, and playing his first major tournament. And also a trio of youngsters that Frew had heard of, namely Arjen Robben, Raphael van der Vaart and Wesley Sneijder, who along with Robin van Persie would lead the Dutch in attack and bring them within a couple of missed Robin one-on-ones of winning the World Cup in 2010. Viewed now, and outside the boundaries of form and time, their squad looks like an all-time dream Dutch side of the last 25 years. Mature older hands and exuberant youth, fighters and artists. It really was a mouth-watering semi-final matchup, as they all should be. In the match itself, among the wealth of teenage stars on display, it was Ronaldo who had risen highest, literally, as he gave Portugal the lead with a header from a corner that his future Man United teammate Van der Sar could do nothing about. The Dutch created a couple of chances of their own, mostly for the always dangerous Van Nistelrooy. Luis Figo almost scored a beautiful left-footed curler that hit the post, but in the second half, as Ronaldo took a quick corner, Maniche was on hand to receive the ball at the side of the penalty area about 25 yards from goal. The Dutch definitely would not have expected what he did next. No one would have. Probably not even Maniche. He turned on the ball, set it to roll to the corner of the box, and unleashed a fierce swinger of a shot that flew almost as if unaffected by gravity and with its momentum constantly building into the top corner of the far side of the goal. Van der Sar had looked furious with the gods at that point, but the crowd went mad, and so did the Portuguese players. There is a saying commentators often use in football when describing the great goals: a goal fit to win any football match. And this was one of those. The Netherlands had plenty of time and would even score via an own goal, setting up a tense final few minutes, but they had no real footballing right to equalize. The Portuguese team made it through. It was a team that played then, a team full of talent and yet also maturity. A team who knew that winning was the eventual goal, not winning single-handedly. Of course, they were Portuguese and hence could all be drama queens if they needed to be, but even that they did with no small amount of skill. The future Portuguese sides at the Euros also contained some wonderful attacking players such as Nani and Ricardo Quaresma and João Moutinho and their like, but they always came unstuck when it came to their main striker. They just haven't had a good one, maybe for the last 15 years. And that has led to the goal-scoring burden falling on Ronaldo, and hence the team being built to suit his image. He likes to shoot, and so do his teammates. The strategy hasn't worked in the past couple of tournaments. As good as Ronaldo is, the Portuguese are too good to become a one-man team. Of course, he will invariably end up dominating the games they win, because he is a goalscorer like no other at the moment, but when it doesn't work, the team and crowd becomes like him, desperate and frustrated. In the absence of characters in the team large enough to take the burden off his shoulders, the coach must intervene. Shift Ronaldo to his favoured wing, where he cannot get frustrated every time a ball isn't played to him in the middle. Let him also create and have someone to create for. As such, there is no reason for Portugal to not beat Hungary. The last time the two sides met in a big tournament, it was the World Cup 50 years ago in 1966 in England, and Portugal, who then boasted the legendary Eusebio, Ronaldo's main challenger to be Portugal's greatest player ever and the highest scorer of that tournament, had won 3-1 at Old Trafford. Eusebio hadn't scored in that game, but others had. Eusebio saved his goals for Brazil two games later, as his brace helped eliminate the world champions, including Pelé and Garrincha. Portugal need this win, and if they get it, Ronaldo will have better opposition against which to show his world-beating talent. Of course, he may just score a hat-trick anyway, but that cannot be the plan tonight. We're predicting a tight game, as the Hungarians will not want to be hammered, that's for sure. Portugal to win 2-0. The other match features Iceland and Austria at the Stade de France. To be fair, Austria have been quite rubbish and a bit of a letdown so far. Sure, they provided a great canvas on which the Portuguese painted an outstanding depiction of misery, but it's time to get serious. They have no place in the latter stages. Iceland, meanwhile, have been a breath of fresh, cold Icelandic air. It's incredible for a country of so few, with not so much footballing pedigree to get this far, to come back from a goal down and hold Portugal to a draw, and to come so agonizingly close to defeating Hungary. One could say that they have done enough to warrant a first ever win in a major championships, but unfortunately or fortunately, in this tournament, winning a match and drawing another basically guarantees qualification. And qualification would mean that another team doesn't make it. The underdog story has been overdone in football already this year, what with Leicester and the English Premier League. It's time for some good old-fashioned elitism to prevail. You may come here, Iceland, but go no further. Better luck next time. Here's to a 1-1 draw, a goal for each team's supporters. And then, at last, at 12:30, we'll kick off our final two group matches. In Group E, Italy have already won, and their prize is a chance for revenge against Spain for the humiliating final loss from 4 years ago. Although it's debatable whether they wanted that chance in the first place. Still, the Italians will want to be ready. They will step out onto the field against Spain, hoping to avoid being beaten for a third consecutive time at the European Championships. We'll tell you about those as well, when the time comes. But if they want to avoid loss, then Antonio Conte would need to get his team right. There is an argument to be made for starting with Juventus' backline in this match too, for continuity's sake, but it isn't advisable. Better is if all three get a rest. In fact, we'd recommend wrapping Barzagli, Bonucci and Chiellini in cotton wool and shipping them off to the hotel for their next match, but those three probably would get up to something naughty, and so maybe Conte should keep an eye on them from up close. He may need to try out some attacking options too, though just in case, but Ireland, who they're playing tonight, are nothing like Spain, and there's really no purpose to experimenting versus them. Best would be to not bother about this game very much, change all your players, and we mean all 11, so that all the others get a run out, and we also find out who that 23rd guy is who's only there to place the cones, and for the heavy lifting. Unfortunately, it's likely to be one of the two spare keepers. So really, this game is very pointless for the Italians. On the other hand, the Republic of Ireland's players can expect a fairly life-changing halftime team talk from Roy Keane if they're not winning by then. Not since the 1994 Quidditch World Cup have Ireland had this kind of opportunity. They can beat the Italians, who frankly couldn't give a damn, and despite being pretty awful so far, make it through to the next round, where they can cartoon around and talk tough some more, and we can all be entertained. Also, you get the feeling that the Italians themselves find the Irish very funny, and we're not just talking about John O'Shea here. We're going for a 1-0 win for the Irish. Which means that either Sweden and Zlatan Ibrahimovic or Belgium and their bright young attackers are out of luck. Everything indicates that Belgium should have this game. They have more good players, and Mark Wilmots has even realized that if he doesn't play Fellaini, then suddenly the earth begins to not look like it's slowly but surely decaying. This is France, the land of culture, and Fellaini is a distinctly agricultural player. Wilmots needs to win this one, and he knows who can win it for him. This match is likely to be a contest of strikers. In the red corner, at 6'3" and weighing easily over 15 stone, is Romelu Lukaku, who scored 2 goals against the Irish before being hauled off and frozen in carbonite for rest and injury-free transportation to Nice. And in the yellow corner, at 6'5" and in a more slender 14 stone form, is Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who we've probably talked up enough already, but seeing as this may be the last time we ever do so for a Sweden match, we might as well do it again. In a contest of just the two of them, Zlatan is far and away the better footballer. However, Lukaku has a supporting cast of very talented young attackers, namely Hazard, De Bruyne and some others. And Zlatan has no one, not one sodden person who deserves to be in the same team. If only their positions were interchanged, Zlatan would have fit perfectly in Belgium's side. Sure, he may not have liked waffles much, but you can imagine him bantering with Hazard about who is the better player and also about which of them thinks that they are the better player more. Instead, he has to make do with Sebastian Larsson, who's not as cool as he sounds. We don't see any way out for Zlatan, but as we back Belgium to win 2-0, we're secretly hoping he finds one. Tonight's matches are sure to be all kinds of topsy-turvy, and if we don't get goals, we're at least hoping for people to not go out quietly. Each team will know precisely what it has to do, and so this is a unique day in international football, the likes of which we haven't seen since the 1994 World Cup, when this type of format was last used. Let's hope the teams make the best use of it. I'm Ankit Prasad, and this has been European Nights.